I cannot imagine growing up as a teenager having Google on a phone. Boy, I would have loved that in history class. I'd have loved that in every class. I'd have been brilliant. Because whenever they asked me a question, I could Google it. I can't imagine what it's like growing up as a teenager. They don't need for anything. I mean, when I was growing up, we had to pay for our own cars. When I was growing up, we had to go outside to play. Things are different. And I'm not blaming teenagers for this. Guess who I'm blaming? Parents for this. Stolen identity. And it's something I think we need to deal with in the church, because I think a lot of us have forgotten our true identity. Have you ever had anybody steal your identity? I have heard horror stories about that. The only time I have ever had anything like that happen was one day I was driving in my truck and I got a phone call from my credit card company, which is kind of weird because they don't normally call you about anything. And it was the fraud department at Capital One, and they wanted to know if I was buying tickets for the Super Bowl experience in Tampa. And I said, I have no experience with that. And they said, okay, we thought it was a fraud because you don't normally go to sporting events on this credit card, so we were just checking. And so they got it all taken care of. I didn't have to do anything other than wait for a new credit card to come in, which I did. But I'm going to tell you something it did to me when I had my identity stolen, even though it was just a credit card, is it made me very leery, very mistrusting, very questioning about my life and my choices. Every time I went online, every time I was doing something, I wondered whether or not somebody was going to take my identity again. But the problem is, with a lot of people in the world today, they don't know what they had, so they don't even know something was stolen from them. If one of the things that you get today is you can only know what was stolen if you know what you had. Now, in Genesis 1:1, it says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And if you don't get that part right there, if you don't get that God created us and God created the heavens and the earth, if you don't get that, you will never understand what you had. As a matter of fact, go up into verse 27 of what was read a few moments ago. So God created mankind in His own image. In the image of God, He created them. Male and female, He created them. What He's saying here is that we were created in the image of God. Imagino Deo is a word, a Latin word that says we're created in the image of God. Now you need to understand that, because of all the things that God created, you're the only thing that God created in His image. That's where your identity comes from. Now, I'm going to tell you, all of you who own cats and dogs and think they're people, you're wrong. I heard a story about a guy that went to the preacher and says, I want my dog to be in heaven and I want you to baptize him. And the preacher tried to say, you know, we can't do that. That's not what's going to happen. And the fellow says, well, you know, I'm really sorry to hear that, because I was going to make a $2,000 donation to the church that baptized my dog. And the preacher says, well, you didn't tell me he was Baptist. Here's the point. My mom has a dog. I love my mom to death, but that woman loves that dog more than she ever did any of her children. Whenever I call her, and I try to call her once a day, the first 5 minutes of every conversation is about Buddy, her dog. And I can't talk about my children, I can't talk about the work of the church until I get an update on that dog. The reason why I'm telling you that is because some people have forgotten that we are created in the image of God. And we need to take back that identity. And God created us in His image. If you open up your lesson notes, I want you to see something. This comes from Genesis chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 3. Now, I don't have time to go into all of it today, but if you want to look at Genesis chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 3, where it talks about how God created the heavens and the earth and what all happened, and then he talks about creating our relationship with Him and how we were created in His image. And then chapter 3, we hear about the fall of man. Now, what I want you to see here is if you go to your Bible, you will learn this about yourself. First of all, we were created uniquely and intentionally. You were created uniquely and intentionally. Now, somebody said to Austin, you know, you keep at it, you'll be as good a preacher as Neil Farr. Well, Austin will never be me. One of the things that I struggled with when I was growing up is I thought everybody had to be like David Farr, my father, and there was no way that I could do that. I am uniquely created, and the other side of it is I was intentionally created. I am not an accident. God intentionally created me, and He created me uniquely. Now, some of my uniqueness I don't like, and some of it I love. I like the fact that I'm 6'2". Well, I'm shrinking. I made to be down to 6'1 now. But I like that. But you know what I don't like? Is that my knees don't work so well anymore. But everything about me God intentionally created, and He put me together, and I am no accident. He created me as a man or a woman, by God, for and from, and write down that word, love. You see, we need to remember that we were created for and from love. God created us because He loved us, and He created us to be loving people. You know, I have tried to preach this and tried to get this across to this congregation, but the most important things that you can do on this earth is love God and love others. Anything else, you're not a success. It doesn't matter how much money you make. It doesn't matter what kind of degree you have. It doesn't matter what kind of house you have. If you don't love God and love others, you are a failure. You were created for and from love, for community and purpose, to bear His image and glorify Him through worship. This is what mankind's identity is. This is what was stolen from us. And here's how it happened. If you look at it, it says we were accidentally mass produce. Instead of being uniquely and intentionally created, we were accidentally mass produced. All the things that have happened up until this time have been accidents. History has said everything that has happened has been accidental. We just got here. We're not even sure how we got here. No, God created you intentionally and with purpose. And we're not mass produced. You see, I understand why in the world today that people don't think they matter. Because first of all, they've been told over and over they're an accident. Didn't mean to happen, it just happened. And that they're a mass production, that we're one of many. And in that, we have lost our identity. And then it goes on to say that we were created as people. We were accidentally mass-produced as people, not as men or as women. One of the things that has been stolen from us is our identity as male and female. in the world today, they are telling us that gender is fluid, that I can be whatever I want to be, no matter what it is, because it's how I feel at the moment. Well, if you were created by a God in heaven, He created you uniquely and individually and not by accident, and He created you as a man or a woman, and that is your identity. And then it goes on to say, we were created as people by chance, that nothing is done on purpose, that it's just by some chance that I'm here on this earth, not because God created me or God wanted me. And then it says, we were created by chance from or for sex, independence, and success. We are created from or for, and that should be sex, not C, independence and success. This is what the world has told us. This is what we are being taught. And we were created accidentally, mass-produced people by chance for sex, independence, success, to bear our image and glorify myself through worship. You see, that's the identity that has been taken from us. That has been the lie that we have been taught. And unfortunately, in today's society, we think that's what it's all about. If I can get enough success in my life, then I'm somebody. If I can just absolutely become somebody who is famous, then I can have the life I've always dreamed of. And we buy into that lie every single day, and most of us have not remembered that we are created in God's image for God's glory, and that we are unique, and that we have purpose in this life. You see, there are so many young people today, I ask them what their biggest question is, and it is, what purpose do I have in my life? Because they have so much. They have everything you can even imagine. I cannot imagine growing up as a teenager having Google on a phone. Boy, I would have loved that in history class. I'd have loved that in every class. I'd have been brilliant. Because whatever they asked me a question, I could Google it. I can't imagine what it's like growing up as a teenager. They don't need for anything. I mean, when I was growing up, we had to pay for our own cars. When I was growing up, we had to go outside to play. Things are different. And I'm not blaming teenagers for this. Guess who I'm blaming? Parents for this. So if you don't like the way your parents are treating you and raising you, come to me. I'll explain to you how it could be better. But here's the thing. Teenagers today, they want to know what their purpose in this life is. Because without purpose, all the fame and all the success that we have is meaningless. 2005, Tom Brady sat down with the guy Croft from 60 Minutes to do an interview. In that interview, they were talking about his success. In 2005, Brady had only won 3 Super Bowl championships. Now, today, he's considered the greatest of all time. That's the reason why they call him the GOAT. For the longest time, I thought they called him a GOAT because that's what he looked like. I didn't know. But Tom Brady has to be the greatest quarterback of all time. Amen? Can we agree on that? In 2005, before he became the GOAT, he's in this interview with Steve Croft, and he's talking about his Super Bowl wins. He's talking about his success, and Brady says, there's times where I'm not the person that I want to be. Why do I have 3 Super Bowl rings and still think there's something greater out there for me? I mean, maybe not a lot of people would say, hey man, this is what it is. I've reached my goal, my dreams, my life. me, I think God has got to be more than this. I mean, this can't be what it's all cracked up to be. I mean, I've done it. I'm 27, and what else is there for me? And Steve Croft looked at him and says, "What's the answer?" And Brady says, "I wish I knew. I wish I knew." Most people would look at Tom Brady and look at the wealth that he has, the success he has, but there is something in Tom Brady that's missing. It's been missing since 2005, and now that he is retired, it's missing still because he's lost his identity. If you look at your lesson notes, you'll see that we're starving for God, but we settle for self-sufficiency. We're starving for God, but we settle for self-sufficiency. If you ever get a chance to go to a third world country, one of the things that you will really see is those people are more spiritual than the people of the United States. I remember going down to Honduras and building a church. And the way that came about was just amazing because the people that were going and looking for places to build houses in Honduras, they were coming in as mission work to build houses for this group of people, and they were going to this particular mountain where there were very few homes, and it was desolate. It took a long time to get up there. They got out of the truck they were driving in, and a lady came running up to them and fell on the ground. And she knew because of the way they looked that they were missionaries, and she began in Spanish begging them to build a church in her village. Not begging them to build her a home, but begging them to build a church, a place where she could worship. You see, when you're living in that kind of poverty, you're not very self-sufficient. In this country where we live today, we buy insurance for our health. We buy insurance for our homes and our cars. We have 401(k)s so that we won't run out of money. We have savings. We make investments. And all the things we're trying to do is to become self-sufficient. And the only times that we really need God is when it's beyond our control. And for a lot of people, that's not very often. For a lot of people, we have everything we need. And as I've said before, we as a nation get all we can. We can all we get. And then we just sit on our cans. And God didn't create us for that. When you're starving for God, that's when you start to find your identity. But most of us are chasing self-sufficiency, where I don't need God. I love the movie The Jerk from several years ago. It was one of my favorite movies, Steve Martin. Those of you who remember it, you are my people. And in the movie The Jerk, everything starts to fall apart, and he starts screaming out, "I don't need anybody or anything." That was a pretty good Steve Martin impersonation, by the way. And he starts to walk out, and he says, "Well, I don't need anybody or anything." And he sees the chairs. "I don't need anybody or anything." And he grabs that chair, "except for this chair." And he's walking out, and he says again, "I don't need anybody or anything." And he sees the lamp. "Anything but this chair and that lamp." And the whole comic bit of that is him saying, "I don't need anything, anybody or anything." And he's grabbing all of these things. And it's because he's trying to be self-sufficient. And as funny as that is, a lot of us think if we can only get this or if only this happens, then we will be okay because we will be self-sufficient. But the reality is what we're crying for is a relationship with God. The second thing is we're starving for love and we're settling for sex. We're starving for love and we're settling for sex. You've heard it said, sex sells, and it does, especially in this country. I can just imagine what historians will think one day if things change when they come back and they look at our commercials They say, well, you know, this really seemed to be about sexuality, but they're selling hamburgers here. I mean, that's really what it's about. And don't get me wrong, God created us for sex, but He created us for sex in a marriage relationship, in a loving marriage relationship. And if we're doing sex outside of that, then we're chasing after the wrong things. There's a whole world out there that's chasing sex because they want to find love. Number three, we're starving for community and we're settling for independence. We're starving for community and we're settling for independence. We want to be so independent. We want to tell everybody how we're going to do it and not how God wants us to do it. As a matter of fact, there are some of you who are members of this church who belong to this body refusing to be a part of a life group because it's very much easier to stay at home in your four walls and not get in other people's life. I know some of you are scared. You're going to go to a life group and the house is going to smell like cats and you're going to think, I can't stand this anymore and I'm not going to keep coming back here because this house smells like cat and these people have become nose blind and I just don't want to be a part of that. And I would agree with you. But there's more than one life group. And if you don't like the way other people's house smells, have it at your house. It's just a thought. Just a thought. You can handle your stink better than you can handle their stink. But let me tell you what happens when you're a part of a community. When you get close to people, and I'm not talking about, hey, how you doing? I'm doing great. It's good to see you again. I know that person. He works here and he does this. No, I'm talking about knowing what makes people laugh and what makes people cry. When you're a part of that kind of community, God does something to you. Because when you're grieving, that community is grieving with you. When you're struggling, that community struggling with you. And when you're rejoicing, that community is rejoicing with you. And so many of us want to be God's only child. And just between me and God and nobody else. And I'm going to say you can get through life that way. But it's so much harder. You've all heard or seen people who've grown up in the church, who raised their kids in the church, who were involved in activities of the church, and then they hit that certain age in their life and they just quit going to church. And I believe with all of my heart as part of that is they don't have community and they've settled for independence. Number four, we're starving for purpose and we settle for success. We're starving for purpose and we settle for success. I was talking with my brother Mike today and he's trying to figure out some things about what's going on here. And he was asking me, he said, well, you know, it's probably going to take 3 to 5 years before this happens and all on. I said, yeah, I'm going to be retired by then. By the time that happens, I'll be retired. And he says, yeah, but you're not moving away because Tampa's the greatest place in the world to live. And I said, yeah, that's what I'm reading. But I don't know. It depends on a lot of things. I may stay as long as I don't have grandkids. But if I ever get grandkids, Nancy is leaving me. But the one thing that I told him that no matter where I'm living, no matter what my employment status is, I'm still going to be working with the church in some capacity, somewhere. Because I don't need success, I need purpose. I have a dear friend that was just going through the motions of her life after losing some family members and just walking through the motions of life. And I began to talk to her and pour into her. And one of the things I said to her is, you've got to find some purpose in your life. You had purpose taking care of your family, and now that they're gone, you've lost that purpose, and you need to find some purpose in your life. And as soon as she started finding purpose in her life, her joy returned. And for many of us, we can't understand why we've got everything we ever wanted and everything we ever needed, but we have no purpose and we don't understand why we're so miserable. It's because God created us for purpose. Number five, we're starving for glory, but we settle for some fame. Austin and I were talking about this the other week. We were talking about preaching, and he was talking about people telling him he did a good job, and, you know, how do you handle this? And he says, you know, it makes you feel really good when you preach a sermon and you're done, and people come out and they pat you on the back, and they said, you did a great job. You're doing this, you're doing that. And, of course, they're complimenting Austin, and I think you should. I'm not saying that at all. I think you should compliment the preacher. As a matter of fact, on the way out, just tell me I am the best preacher you ever heard. That's all I want to hear. But I reminded Austin. You see, when I preach, and I preach for my glory, and somebody pays me a compliment, I've missed the mark. But when I preach, and I preach for God's glory, it doesn't matter what you say. Because I'm living for God's glory, not for Neil's glory. And when I live for Neil's glory, I'm settling for fame, not for glory. The very last thing on here is we're starving for worship, and we settle for self-obsession. We live in the most narcissistic society that I have ever seen. We have Facebook posts. We have TikTok. We have Snapchat. We have all kinds of things. The word selfie was not in existence 10 years ago or 15 years ago. But now, just about any place you go, I remember walking up to a restaurant, and there was a young lady out front, and anybody that's younger than me is a young lady. And she had her phone, and she was putting it up like this. And then her face changed, and she walked in like a normal person. And I'm thinking to myself, what have we become? And whatever you do, brothers and sisters, for me, for my sake, do not take pictures of your food. It is to be consumed, not to be taken pictures of. I remember going to dinner with one of the sisters here. We're having a nice dinner. The food comes out. She pulls out the camera. She takes a picture. And I said to her, why are you doing that? And she says, if I don't take a picture, it never happened. I wanted to go into a dialogue. If a tree falls in the forest and no one's there to hear it, did it really fall? But I didn't. I just grinned and held my tongue until today. We are so self-obsessed. When we go out into this world, we want everybody to have an image of us and what we look like and how we've got it all together. Instead, we need to go out in the world and glorify God because we're made in His image. And instead of pointing to ourselves, we need to point to the God in heaven who created us for purpose. And He created us on purpose to be unique and to have meaning in this life. Well, that's all well and good, Neil. This is the introduction to the series, by the way. It's only going to get worse from here. But here's what I want you to see. Back side of your lesson notes. How do we interpret this world with this knowledge? Number one, we need to be compassionate. We need to be compassionate for others because other people's identity has been stolen as well. You see, one of the things that we do, and we don't mean to do it, but it's just something in our natures. We have a tendency to judge others by their actions, and we judge ourselves by our intentions. I never intended to do that. I never intended to say that. Well, you said, you did. We need to have compassion for other people because let me tell you, we live in a world where their identity has been lost. And when we see crazy things happening in the news, when we see crazy things happening in politics, we need to have compassion on those who have missed the boat because they don't know their true identity. And they're settling for things instead of going after the things they're starving for. Number two, at times we will feel like we're losing, but we've already won. At times it's going to feel like we're losing the battle, but we've already won. I know the other day I was driving along, and I don't know what happened. I don't know what the route was I was taking, but it seemed like on every single corner there was somebody panhandling. And there was a guy walking by, and I just felt bad for him because of the fact that he was there panhandling in the hot sun. But I also could look at his eyes, and I could tell he was on drugs. And I didn't want to help him by giving him money for something he didn't need. And you know, before you judge me, you got to understand my history. When I first moved to Tampa, I wasn't used to panhandling. And I figured out real quick, these people are hungry. I need to go get them something. I remember one day going to Wendy's and then going back to work to go eat my sandwich and my drink and stuff. And I had ordered my meal and I had it in my truck. And this guy was saying, hungry, we'll work for food. And I didn't have work for him, but I did have my food there. And I grabbed my sandwich and all, and I rolled down my window and handed him my drink. Handed him my Coke, and he goes, oh, thank you, man, I appreciate that. And he started drinking the Coke, and then as the light changed and I moved on, I looked in my rearview mirror, and he took that sandwich, my lunch, and flung it into the woods. I did the right thing, but it didn't feel right. But as soon as I saw that person, and I thought, should I have helped him or should I have not helped him? And I really felt like I shouldn't, and I was wrestling with that. Another block down the street, there was somebody else. And I got to thinking, if I went around Tampa and gave every single person on every single corner money, what would happen? And I got to thinking about it, there'd always be somebody else, wouldn't there? And sometimes for me, when I look at the sinfulness of this world, I look at the depravity, I look at the number of people that are searching for things and settling for the things of this world, I think it looks like we've lost. But the reality of it is we've already won. Number three, we will feel the fullness of our true identity again. We will feel the fullness of our true identity again. And that will be in heaven. You see, there's times when I have self-doubt. There's times when I'm fearful. There's times when I'm tempted. There's times when I'm lonely. There's times when I'm angry. There's all of these times that I face here on this earth. But I know that there's going to come a day that I am not going to be facing that anymore, because I'm going to be with my Creator, the one who I was made in the image of. And by having that relationship, I'll never have to fear again of losing my identity. Each Lord's Day, we sing an invitation song. And we sing that invitation song so you have a chance to respond to your worship. It's not a response to just my message. It's a response to our worship. I love coming in and worshiping with you on Sunday mornings. I get renewed every Sunday morning. And the reason why I get renewed is not because I get to preach, although it is pretty good preaching, isn't it? The reason I get renewed is because I'm with my brothers and sisters of like-minded faith who love me and love God, and I can focus on that. And in focusing on that, I worship. I worship God, and I thank Him for you. Some of you have gotten some of my texts where I said, I prayed for you today, didn't have anything in particular that I was praying for, but I just thank God for bringing you into my life, because you're an encouragement to me. You're an inspiration to me. You're somebody that holds my hands up when I'm weak, because I have community here. And when we sing an invitation song, we don't sing it because we want to make somebody feel guilty. We don't want to sing that song because we think, oh, such and such needs to repent. We're singing that song to encourage one another to be more like Christ. And it may be you're here today and in some big way you need to make a change in your life. It may be that you need to be buried in Christ in baptism. We want you to do that if that's what you need to do. But more than anything, we want you to go out these doors and be changed. Because if you've truly worshiped, you've changed. I know there's some of you in here that come just because you got to be somewhere. I remember as a kid, my dad, he doesn't move around like I did. My dad would stand right here and he would preach. And he was a good preacher. I mean, nothing wrong with his preaching whatsoever, but he stood still. And I could focus on him like I'm focusing on Mike right now. And I could be in the Bahamas and he never knew it. So you wonder why I walk around, because if I'm walking around and you're not paying attention, because I'll be here and you'll be looking here, and the next thing I know, I'm over here real quick and you're still looking there. I'm like, I lost them. But we're here today to worship God, to glorify Him, and to regain our true identity in Him. And as we sing this invitation song, if you need to take back your identity today, today is the day to do it. Today is the day to make a decision that you're going to love God more and know Him better. The lesson is yours as we stand and sing.